40 years ago this summer, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law. Johnson's public act was the response to countless private experiences with segregation across the United States. Some of those experiences are collected in a book that was compiled by NPR's Juan Williams. The oral history called My Soul Looks Back in Wonder collects the memories of the blues man B.B. King. He writes that in the days of segregation, it was good to have a white friend because white people could kill you. Another story comes from Eugene Rivers. He spoke into a tape recorder.
I was arrested for corner lounging, standing in my doorway. This was just, what are you doing there? Standing in my doorway. Come here. Why? Kid, don't give me any lip. Come here. I didn't do anything. Kid, come here. Why? You're under arrest. And so when they wrote up the arrest report, they put down corner lounging. It was an amazing experience.
That's just one of the stories of the civil rights experience in the book by NPR's Juan Williams, who joins us now. And Juan, who are we just listening to?
You're listening to Reverend Eugene Rivers, who grew up in Philadelphia, as you said, Steve. He's now head of the National 10 Points Leadership Foundation in Boston. And like many of the people in this book, which is about people having some sort of an epiphany, a moment of revelation in their life where they realize there's something that they can't understand and they want to act against and get involved with in terms of their political action. In his case, it really goes back to the 60s when those little girls were killed at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham. And he couldn't understand as a child how violence like that could be perpetrated first at a church, but secondly against little girls who he always thought of as rather dainty and somehow protected against that kind of violence. And for him, of course, it led him into a life of civil rights activism.
There are a lot of stories here about killings, about arrests, but you also included stories that were just about embarrassing social situations.
Well, one comes to mind, Steve, of Constancia Dinky Romley, who's the daughter of the author Jessica Mitford. And she couldn't believe what her mother and her father were telling her about the realities of racial segregation in America. She was growing up in a rather, you know, affluent community and thought it was things were fairly integrated. And then one day confronts the reality of one of her classmates, a black cheerleader, in fact, head of the cheerleading group, not being invited to a luncheon.
And she wouldn't look at me. And finally she said, well, I wasn't invited. And she walked on. And I looked at these girls that I was walking with who were the organizers of this event, and I said, what is she talking about? And one of the girls, who was very uncomfortably kind of squirming, said, well, we didn't think that she'd be comfortable coming because everybody that's going is white. And it was as though, you know, centuries of ignorance had been stripped away from me. I became flushed and I can barely remember what happened, but I know I became hysterical, and I started physically attacking this girl.
This leads to a life of political activism for her. She becomes one of the people involved in Freedom Summer. She becomes someone who is involved in sit-ins at Woolworths, trying to break apart those lunch counters, segregated lunch counters. Becomes an activist throughout her life, and I think it's a model for what you see throughout this book, Steve, is that you have this notion of people discovering within themselves that they have the capacity to create social change.
And you have every kind of person here. This is a white woman.
Yeah, she's white. I mean, we have people who are disabled who talk about, you know, waking up one day being disabled and thinking, well, there's nothing I can do, and then suddenly finding themselves involved in a disabilities movement to get ramps and easier access for people with disabilities in the country. You have people who are involved in the sanctuary movement for immigrants or illegal immigrants coming across the border in the United States. You have people such as Susan Brown Miller talking about her own involvement in the civil rights movement, then becoming a model for what was the emerging women's rights movement, you know, in fact, holding a sit-in, she said, in 1970 at Ladies Home Journal.
Why in this book did you include a chapter called The Birth of Elvis?
Well, you know, music is part of the deal. And in this book, we tell the story, or Jim Dickinson tells his own story. I think this is one of the interesting things about this book. It's different for me as an author because I'm really working with the words of other people, first-person narrative. And you have Jim Dickinson telling a story about being a young white man growing up down in the South in the Delta and having the experience of rural blacks and rural whites coming into Memphis. And you know what he says? That produces Elvis Presley.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
I mean, it's black people music, it's country white people music mixed together, and it becomes American music. And you have B.B. King, you know, Beale Street blues boy, B.B. King, talking about his own experience and saying, you know, he had three white men as mentors down in the Delta who encouraged him in terms of producing blues music because they, as white men, loved the music. And, of course, B.B. King goes on to spread his music and his message, an African-American message, not only throughout the United States, but around the globe.
The thrill is gone. The thrill is gone away.
There's two different plot lines you can pursue when it comes to blacks and whites and music in that era, and one is whites exploiting blacks and taking the music away. You're suggesting a different plot line.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, part of the plot line, if you go down, you know, to Memphis to this day, I mean, part of the line is that the music becomes one. It's not simply one type of music being stolen by whites or black music being stolen by whites. It's a synthesis of music, of different types of music coming together to produce just this tremendous explosion that we know is rock and roll.
And I can remember the 4th of July, running through the backwoods, baby.
And again, what you see is this tremendous mix. It's church, it's country, it's hillbilly music, and then, of course, it develops into the rock and roll and funk. But, I mean, there's the birth. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that.
What do all those individual stories add up to, as you see it?
Well, I think what it says is there's, in the United States, with our democracy, our ability to speak out, to protest, we have, time and again, throughout history, produced great citizen movements. If you think about the women's right to vote, you know, in 1920, what it comes out of is, of course, women who were involved in the abolitionist movement, who later become involved in a women's right to vote movement. People begin to see the world differently, and as a result, get involved in taking some action. That leads to mobilization, to coalition across boundaries, whether it be racial boundaries or class boundaries, and then you see there's a movement. And you say, well, who was that person? They were anonymous before, they rose to some moment, and then they're gone again. What you see in most of this book are really people whose names you wouldn't recognize, who nonetheless helped to change American history.
We were talking to NPR's Juan Williams. He's the author of My Soul Looks Back in Wonder. That's a collaboration between the AARP and the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights.
I can still hear.
Other oral histories and an excerpt from My Soul Looks Back in Wonder are at NPR.org. Tomorrow, Morning Edition's Cokie Roberts recalls the signing of the Civil Rights Act 40 years ago.